Good evening and welcome to The Big Five, a show that is young at 21, the oldest running debate show on Indian news television. I'm Sanket Upadhyay. There was a time when election counting in India used to happen over 3, 4 days, even 5 days, a week, round the clock. Imagine the size of this country. And then we shifted to the much debated electronic voting machine. There still are arguments of fraud, but they've not been proven yet. The EVM machine now comes with a paper trail, which is called VVPAT. Results in India are now out on the very same day. Again, I remind you, imagine the size of this country, the population. This, however, is not the case in the United States of America, where counting is still on. And amid allegations of voter fraud and date stamp changing in the US, the process of counting is painfully slow and down to the wire in some of these crucial states. States say they want to be accurate, not fast. The scope of going wrong does not exist, as in many key states, the margin of difference is extremely tight. We'll get you the numbers in just a short moment. Between Trump and Biden, whatever the result may be, let us just zoom out and look at the larger picture. In India, there is tremendous interest among groups here on which administration will be better suited for our country. So we thought we'll keep that as today's big poser on The Big Fight tonight. Trump versus Biden, who is better for India? That's going to be our debating point. But let's quickly take an update from Steve Herman, White House Bureau Chief of Voice of America. Thank you very much, Mr. Herman, for joining us. First of all, I want to ask you, would you like to tell us a little about the latest update? It's an unusual situation in your country where you have lots of developments taking place. There's a statement from Donald Trump as well. If you could just give us a roundup of what's happening right now.
Well, Joe Biden is on the cusp of achieving 270 electoral votes, the number needed to win the presidency in this country. Now, there are a number of states that will hold the key that are still relevant to what's going to happen from now on. In all four of those states, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, and Pennsylvania, Joe Biden is leading. And based on where the outstanding votes are coming from, we know that those are primarily from Biden-friendly territory. So it seems very unrealistic that President Trump, with the possible exception of Arizona, which has already been called by AP and Fox News for Joe Biden, could be turned around. So at this moment, it almost looks inevitable that Joe Biden will be the presumptive winner based on the projections according to the electoral vote count.
Mr. Herman, how do you then respond to the statement coming in from Donald Trump where he says that it's not over yet?
This is from his campaign. One of the lawyers on the campaign put out that statement, I believe, within the past hour. They're taking their cues from the president, of course, and he has been saying he's going to fight on, making these unsubstantiated allegations about voter fraud and other malfeasance. The campaign has said they're going to go to court. They're going to produce evidence backing this up. So far, we have not seen any of that evidence. Some of the motions that they have filed have been quickly thrown out by judges. Now, let's say that it was off by that Biden wins by 100 votes or 1,000 votes in one state, such as Pennsylvania. And of course, there will be recounts in any state that where it's that close. But if we're talking about four states, putting Joe Biden well over 300 electoral votes, it seems like to have a perfect line of cases going in the direction for the president with these filings in the different states, that seems quite unrealistic, according to all of the legal experts and many of the Republican politicians that we've been talking to.
Mr. Herman, I was interested in knowing what really are the systems in place as far as American election process is concerned to be able to check any cases of potential voting fraud. I mean, do you have a robust system? Would you like to tell the world about that system? Because when the president of your country goes on television and the whole world is watching and says that there is voting fraud, then I really wonder whatever happened to those systems.
Well, the most important thing I think to point out is that the president does not control the election process. It is the states, not the federal government. And each state has a different system. Now, you were talking about the wonderful electronic voting system that you have in India. Yes, we have electronic balloting in much of this country. But what we saw unique with this election due to the coronavirus pandemic were an unprecedented number of mail-in votes. I was one of them. I'm an absentee voter in Virginia, but I vote in the state of Nevada, which has been my permanent residence for many decades. The ballot comes in the mail. I fill it out the old-fashioned way. I put it into a secrecy envelope inside of another envelope, sign on the back of the outer envelope, and mail it back to, in my case, Clark County, Nevada. They then open it up. They check the rolls. They see my name. They compare my signature. If it doesn't look right, I will get an email perhaps saying, hey, we need you to validate that this is your ballot. That ballot is then taken out of the secrecy envelope, separated from the other information, and put in physical piles. And that's why this counting has been going on so long in so many places. It's a very old analog style process.
So, Mr. Herman, then what do you make of these allegations of fraud? So you say that there is a proper system in place to check whether voter fraud has happened or not?
We have seen no single instance of voter fraud in this election yet that has been substantiated. There are allegations by the Trump campaign and some other Republicans. In Pennsylvania, the state we're all watching right now, the officials there say they had one particular case where a man tried to get an absentee ballot for his dead mother. That's the only case that they're aware of. In Nevada, the Trump campaign has said that there were several hundred, perhaps a thousand people who had been residents of the state that were no longer residents that had voted out of place, out of state improperly. And they've supplied a list of names and addresses. That's being checked. But the reporters I've been in communication with in Nevada who are very reliable on this, say that there's no evidence of this. It's all ridiculous. And even if we find in the recounts, the auditing, that there's 100 or 1,000 votes that were mistakenly tabulated here and there, if Joe Biden gets well over 300 electoral votes, it's not going to change the outcome of the election.
Okay, so when Donald Trump says that it's not over yet, does he really mean it, or is it one of those things that he keeps saying all the time? Mr. Herman?
Well, he has a history, as you know, in the past 4 years of trying to back up what he's saying with actions. What we could possibly see is he creates such a ruckus, say, in Pennsylvania, where he files so many lawsuits and gets a judge to hold up things that delays the actual sending of the electors for the formalization of the vote next month. There are some tactics like that that we could see the president engage in. Ultimately, the experts we've been talking with say these will fail. Could it possibly delay and mess up the system for a period of time? Yes, there is that potential.
All right, Steve Herman, pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us right here on NDTV.
My pleasure.
Thank you. All right, let's now quickly start the big fight. And of course, the topic of discussion is going to be what this means for India. I would like to get all our panelists up on screen. Hindal Sen Gupta is an author of Recasting India, is now with us. Suhasini Haider, National Editor and Diplomatic Affairs Editor of The Hindu. Thank you very much, Suhasini, for joining us. Madhu Gaur Yaski, Secretary of Indian Overseas Congress, Secretary AICC in charge of Karnataka, is also with us. Alisa Wad is a journalist. Thank you very much, Alisa, for joining us. Michael Kugelman, Deputy Director and Senior Associate for South Asia Program. And Amitoj Singh, political journalist and also a very dear friend. Thank you very much, Amitoj, for joining us right here. Okay, so let's begin first on what this means for India. Michael Kugelman, I want to begin with you. A lot is being said, and there is not exactly a sense of fear, but a tone of concern in the Indian establishment that perhaps a Biden presidency may not be that great news for India as, say, a Trump presidency. That's why the calculation was that the Prime Minister go all out asking for votes. However, they also feel that it's not going to be that bad as well. What does a Biden administration mean for India? I mean, what can the policy differences be between a Biden and a Trump as far as India is concerned? Mr. Kugelman, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. My apologies. So, I think that on the whole, generally speaking, a Biden administration would be just as good of a thing for India as a second Trump administration would be. I think it's quite clear that there's a strong bipartisan consensus in Washington in favor of a continued and growing U.S.-India partnership. And the relationship is fueled by two key interests that also enjoy bipartisan support. One is countering terrorism, and the other is counterbalancing China. And these are very significant issues for anyone in Washington, and certainly a President Biden. And I think that he would want to continue to build on the momentum that that came to the U.S.-India relationship during the course of the Trump years. Though, of course, as you know, the U.S.-India relationship has been growing in a pretty significant way ever since the early 90s and especially the early 2000s. That includes several Democratic administrations, Bill Clinton and then more recently Barack Obama. So on that level, I think that this election is really a win-win for India. It doesn't really matter if it's Biden or Trump again. It's going to work out just fine. There are certainly some differences between the two. And I think that perhaps the biggest concern for New Delhi, if there were to be a Biden administration, is that a Biden White House would be more willing to be critical of India on human rights issues in Kashmir and beyond than a Trump administration would. Joe Biden has pitched his foreign policy vision as one that's meant to restore and strengthen democracy and human rights in the world at a moment when authoritarianism has been making significant inroads. And I think that even though he and Washington would continue to view India as the world's largest democracy, I don't think that he would necessarily be he would not necessarily hold back. And I think that there could be some criticism. It would be muted for sure, just because
like Trump did not criticize India ever.
Well, true, but it was relatively modest. And when you did have criticism of India during the Trump years, it typically did not come from the White House. It came from Congress. It came from other agencies. You're right. President Trump did say some very unfortunate and nasty things. But I'm talking about actual, formal criticism. Sure. You didn't really hear that much of that. But bottom line is, I think this relationship will be just fine. India would certainly benefit from a Biden administration, particularly looking at Biden's Iran policy. If he does follow through and try to improve relations with Iran, that would be a real boon for India, to be sure.
Okay. Mr. Madhu Gauriyaski, I want to come to you. See, there are 8 points of possible change that may be of concern, right? And maybe we can talk about them one by one. Let's put that graphic on screen right now for our viewers to see. So there are 8 possible points of change. Point number 1, US-China versus US-India. Let's quickly put that graphic. We were playing it just a short while ago. India-US trade and H-1B visas. That's the graphic on your screen. What are the main differences? US troop withdrawal from Afghanistan and rise of the Taliban, its impact on China. Human rights Kashmir, the point that Michael Kugelman was talking about. What is the Biden administration's position going to be? We know they've been absolutely critical when they were not in power. Modi-Trump's strong relationship, and will that continue with Biden as well? The impact of Kamala Harris, an extremely important point. Climate change. US will be back to the Paris Treaty. Where does this place India? And Iran oil for India again. So these are the key bullet points that we've been able to come across as far as that will be the main areas of concern, whether there will be a change on these fronts or not. So, Mr. Yashki, where do you stand on this?
Yes, there is positive hope on these points which you mentioned, Sanket. One is the H-1 visa immigration policy, which Trump was more restrictive immigration policy, which caused millions of jobs and many thousands of Indian tech workers right after graduation, they're losing jobs because they're not allowed to work. They're not even allowed to stay during the pandemic time, which India has been protesting. The student right after, like the earlier policies, right after graduating, you could have worked there by staying, getting an either practical trainee or changing to H-1B visas. That was restrictive, which is trying to protect American jobs, which is bad. If you see the Biden's statement that H-1B tech workers rather saved millions of American jobs than they're losing. So there is a positive note on that. Then if coming to environment, where if it's U.S. coming back to coming Paris Agreement, agreed to contribute $100 billion every year, that helped many developing countries, including India. In the pharma sector, Obamacare was completely ignored by Trump, and Biden going to start the Obamacare, the many generic drugs which India produces, there's a huge opportunity in that.
And imposed, including high tariff rates on rubber, even latest in this October, aluminum products also was high tariff was increased. Even as you mentioned, the oil import from oil from Iran, which is also again, the Trump administration stopped India buying and made compulsory to buy high-priced crude oil from U.S. So that will cause our cost on our economy.
Sure.
So many of these sectors, which I think I'm looking at more positive, there is some problems with the Biden administration raising on human rights violation and Kashmir issue, Article 370. But one positive note, Sanket, which you could see, during Trump's regime, the democracy has weakened. Radicalization of nationalism was set at a high peak. Whoever is questioning, they're termed as an anti-national. And democratic candidate Biden...
No, which country are you talking about?
Those values can. Even in the U.S., anyone questions Trump administration, they've also branded as an anti-national, which Modi administration does the same thing here. Questioning Modi's decision, even the responsible opposition party like the Congress, and they term that we are anti-national. So across the globe, democracy was weakened. And it's a good sign for democracy more than anything. Other positive measures of 8 points which you mentioned, I could see the biggest gain for the democracy itself.
Okay. Before I come to you, Hindal, I would like to introduce Mr. John W. Bartlett. He's a voting rights lawyer. He spent election day on the ground in Pennsylvania as part of the Biden-Harris legal team. He's a partner at the law firm Murphy Orlando in Jersey City, New Jersey. Thank you very much, Mr. Bartlett. I want to ask you this, since you are part of the legal team of Biden-Harris, you must have seen the comments from the legal team of Mr. Trump. They say it's not over yet. Can you decode for us what this means?
It may not be. Thank you very much, first of all, for having me on, and good evening. It may not be over in the respect that there are certain states where the Trump campaign will be entitled to have a recount of the votes. But the fact of the matter is, recounts very rarely change the outcome. There's only two times in the last years that I can think of when a recount changed the outcome. And that was when the gap was very, very small to begin with in Washington state in 2004 or in Minnesota in 2008, where the Republican was up by about 200 votes and they did a recount and the Democrat ended up by about 100 votes. Those are two examples where it changed. But think about how small that margin had to be. Biden is already up by more than 1,100 votes in Georgia, already up probably by, tens of thousands in Pennsylvania. There's no prospect of a recount actually changing the result in these states.
So you say that any attempt as of this moment to urge for a recount or take these matters to courts is only a delaying tactic and it doesn't really affect the impact, just delays things a little?
I think that's correct. It's part of what we've seen from the Trump legal team from the very beginning, which is about making it more difficult for certain kinds of people to vote and about raising questions about certain kinds of votes. You mentioned that I was on the ground in Pennsylvania on Election Day, and there's a very telling thing that I watched there. I was in a conservative northern part of the state, and the machine vote went very, very heavily for Trump. The folks that came out on election day, went into the machine and cast their ballot very heavily for Trump. The vote by mails, those people who mailed in an absentee ballot, those went almost as heavily for Joe Biden. So how you vote indicates who you voted for, which is why the Trump campaign has done everything they can to raise questions about mail-in votes and has even used the United States Postal Service to try and slow them down.
Okay. Mr. Bartlett, I wanted to ask you the possibility of an increase in the margin of error, particularly because we are talking about elections in the midst of a pandemic in COVID times. This is an unusual situation which has led to an unusual form of voting. Do you think that is something which is raising a sense of fear among people?
Anything that's new and unfamiliar, especially involving a fundamental right, is going to make some people concerned and make some people fearful. And just to be clear, vote by mail ballots are subject to some difficulties. In Pennsylvania, if you don't have your ballot in two envelopes, a blank one and then the outside mailing envelope, if you just have it in that one envelope, your vote won't be counted. So there are risks there in terms of getting all those votes counted. But fundamentally, I mean, the U.S. military has been voting by mail for 160 years. It's a system that we know works, and a system that we know is safe. And again, if you're talking about a recount, you're talking about running the same ballots back through the same machines a second time. You're not likely to change the outcome. My concern is that what we're going to have is delay, and what we're going to have is a process where the Trump administration, knowing they haven't won re-election, knowing they've got no prospect of prevailing, nevertheless draw this out, raise questions, and put the burdens of that on the Biden administration.
Sure. Mr. Bartlett, many thanks for joining us right here on NDTV. Pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Hindol Sen Gupta, let me now come back to you. Sorry for the delay. I just wanted to ask you now, how do you look at changed relationships? You know, a lot of people also, a lot of analytics, we spoke to Suhasini yesterday. I remember Suhasini mentioning about how, you know, one should not look at a dramatic change in policy, because U.S.-India relationships have in fact been quite administration neutral. Most of these analysts seem to look at these relationships like this. Would you then sense that within the Modi administration, there is some sense of unease in dealing with a Biden than dealing with a Trump, even though Mr. Trump is extremely eccentric, to say the very least?
No, why should there be unease at all, Sanket? Prime Minister Modi had a perfectly good working relationship with President Trump's predecessor, President Barack Obama. He continued to have a solid working relationship with President Trump. And I agree with Suhasini, with President Biden, if indeed President Biden, you know, moves from president and becomes, you know, the President of the United States from being a candidate, Prime Minister Modi will look to have a similar good working relationship. The fundamental ties between the India and the United States are set to grow to a whole new level with the growing importance of the Indo-Pacific, with the growing importance of what's happening with China, including what has happened with the COVID virus, including from the world of business, a growing need around the world in Fortune 500 companies for greater, what we would call, supply chain resilience. And if you have been tracking every research analyst of worth who has been talking about this, whether it's Gartner or any other, McKinsey, you name them, supply chain resilience is a very, very important thing, and its importance will only grow. And a large amount of the supply chain resilience will come from reshoring and from shoring in other locations, what we call the China Plus One strategy. And there, India is a very, very important cornerstone. So whether it's the Indo-Pacific, whether it's supply chain resilience and the Hindol, China Plus One strategy, business in America and politics in America,
so you're
has
saying,
to do greater
Hindol,
and
do you think that the relationship has
India.
The...
So I don't see any administrations come and go.
Sure.
But the fundamentals are too strong.
Sure. So you say that the Indo-US relationship has the inherent underlying maturity to overlook a statement like "Ab ki baar Trump Sarkar" made by none other than Prime Minister Modi?
These are political statements. These are political statements which are made for political reason. But when countries don't do business or don't stop doing business because somebody said one political statement here or somebody else said another political statement there, right? Recently, President Trump said India and its air was filthy. Now, while that may have hurt some of us, the fact is India will still do business with America. I mean, these are political statements. I think we make too much of them. The fundamentals are so strong, and the need for those fundamentals to work together are so strong, both in business and in strategic terms, that I don't see any major hiccups.
Suhasini, then Amitoj, and then Ms. Awad, one by one. Suhasini, I want to come to you now. These 8 points of change that we were speaking about, the key points that are going to be the markers which will decide how the relationship has changed or has not changed. Some changes could be for the good, and some change, if they don't happen, the better. What is your assessment?
I do agree broadly with the 8 points that you have mentioned could possibly be a point of change. I'm not sure that they are actually going to see that much broad change. As I've said, India-US relations have a trajectory of 20 years, year on year, getting closer, doing better on trade and all the rest of that. What you pointed out in your 8 points, the human rights, raising issues of Jammu and Kashmir, that is certainly going to be a factor in the in a democratic administration. I don't think you have to look far. The fact is, when Mr. Trump came to Delhi, he was perhaps 10 kilometers away from communal riots and pictures of Delhi on fire, and he said not one word. He basically battled on and discussed bilateral ties. But a few years before that, when Mr. Barack Obama had come to India, he did not leave without giving a certain speech in which he was openly critical of any move away from Gandhian values in India and what kind of impact that would have on the shared values India and the U.S. share. Yeah. I suggest that we possibly will hear more of that with Kamala Harris in a position, with Pramila Jayapal having been reelected and clearly in a position, coming to a position of power. So that's the second place where things might be negative. And the third is what we have to watch more closely. You know, Sanket, we are talking about India. Obviously, we are concerned about how this will change India. The larger question is how much of Trumpism or a Trumpian legacy internationally can Mr. Biden actually reverse? Because he's going to have so many things that have been done in the last few years by Mr. Trump. Is he going to reverse America's walkout from the UN agencies like WHO, UNESCO, Human Rights Council? Is he going to reverse Mr. Trump's walkout from the Paris Climate Accord and the JCPOA, Iran? All these will have impacts on India. And more importantly, is he going to reverse the kind of pullout from world and multilateral order organizations that Mr. Trump has presided over? He has, in a sense, spoken so much about making America great again. But in fact, he has presided over the decline of American influence in the world in many senses. Mm. So is Mr. Biden going to reverse that attitude of America? I think all of these are going to be something that India will watch very closely, but not with too much concern. As I said, I don't think relations will be there.
Right. Amitoj, I want to come to you now. You must be speaking to a lot of people on the ground as a political journalist, many Indians also. How do they view this change now that this change is happening? It's pretty evident in terms of numbers. How do they look at India's relationship vis-a-vis these two leaders? What do you get to hear?
Well, I mean, Sanket, thanks for having me. I think I broadly, like Suhasini was saying, I agree with a lot of what's been said, and I'm glad that Suhasini brought up the point of the UN, because I was going to stress on that not being in your graphic of 8 points. But to answer your question more directly, I think the biggest takeaway from a Joe Biden presidency and not a Donald Trump presidency, even though I just want to point out right now, for those of us who are getting a bit well, we're thinking ahead of a Biden presidency. I think we should just hold our horses. It could take a while. There could be legal battles. And that's something we should just let our viewers know. The biggest takeaway is going to be how India's potential as a natural balancer to China is something that Joe Biden will stress on. Even though Donald Trump has played hot and cold with both India and China, with their leaders and his statements about both these countries, calling the coronavirus a China virus and then calling India's or Delhi's air dirty, which, by the way, yes, it is. I agree. And I'm glad I'm not there right now. as much as I miss the food. The big statement, I think, is that we're looking at a situation where the global order is going to change. And Joe Biden has made it very clear. And Suhasini, you made an interesting point about climate change. Joe Biden is going to join the climate accord again in Paris. He's made that absolutely clear in the debates. He has intense pressure coming in from those that Trump and his team call socialists. Joe Biden knows that he's going to face pressure from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and also Ed Markey, the likes of course, Bernie Sanders. They want to make it very clear that they're going to go ahead and be progressive in that field. H-1B visa, I think that's one thing that concerns us. And I was a student just a few months back completing my master's for mid-career journalists at Columbia University. And what I can tell you is that there were two things that I mean, the American dream was dead. Students and legal professionals were jaded. They were disillusioned. They were dejected because Donald Trump's policies were scuttling, all kinds of visa applications, extensions, wives who are working here, trying to get work here with people who have already been working here for years, who have come in from India. They were not getting work. It has been a very, very difficult time. And this time, the likes of Shrikant Chakraborty, who, if you've not heard of, I want to just point out, was the chief of staff of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, by the way, is an Indian origin individual and has certainly been labeled by the Washington Post as the chief of staff of the progressive movement in America. Mm-hmm. He is somebody who's been leading the progressive movement. And I think that is going to be a very interesting, area to watch out for. Yes, Trumpism is going to play a major factor. Multilateralism will be important. But at this point, to say that Biden is going to change a lot of things, I'm not so sure. Will he be as divisive? Not at all. But the biggest takeaway for a Biden presidency, I think, is going to be the fact that we've seen a populist surge in a lot of countries, from Brazil to India to America to Europe. That's going to face a knockout punch. Okay, people are not going to believe in populist strategies as much. The idea of a more united world is going to once again be part of the system, and religious intolerance perhaps will again suffer a blow.
Sure. Okay. Ms. Awad, I want to now come to you and just take on from where the point that Amitoj was talking about. He spoke about pulling out of UN agencies and how rash the decision-making process of a Donald Trump was. Then the point on human rights in Kashmir, how this new administration could possibly be a little more vocal in the Indian context with respect to Kashmir. And another thing which matters a lot to Indian students particularly is to go and live the American dream, to go and study there, get and to work there, get these visas. On these fronts, do you think that we win some and then we lose some?
Well, Trump tried to personalize foreign policy, but Biden will go back to the multilateralism and regain USA's position as a leading power in the world. Mm-hmm. It's definitely going to take time to rejoin and leave different agreements that Trump has left and had an impact on. In terms of the American dream, the great thing about the Trump presidency is that it really put a spotlight on it and made people realize the realities of the American dream. Because there is, while these are political statements that can, be dismissed because it's just politics, these are statements. The fact is, these statements are emboldening people in the U.S. who are racist, who are xenophobic, who are making life difficult for the students and the people who are actually in the country. So while there is you know, no difference, as India and USA already are strategic partners, and the meeting between the foreign minister and the defense minister of the two countries have already met. It's a clear indication that there is that bond, there is that relationship that exists. But the reality is, for the people, for the Indian people who are in the US, it is a difficult role. At least with the Biden presidency, there will be an acknowledgement that there is white nationalism on the rise, but white nationalism that is turning into white terrorism that is ruining the lives of many immigrants. So at least for the Indians that are in the US, they will get that acknowledgement, and they'll get some sense of protection that they too are human beings and people and deserve a shot at the American dream, as well as any other immigrants that hope to come and make this country their home.
What about issues of human rights? What is your assessment?
I think overall, Biden definitely is somebody who is going to focus more on human rights. You can see it with the team that he has, and you can see it with the policies that he's put into place, whether it's immigration. It may be a point of conflict between India and USA, but because of the already established relationship, it doesn't seem like something that can deteriorate or break the bond.
Hindal, how would you respond to this? Do you think that this is going to be perhaps a constant irritant in the relationship between India and the U.S. under a Biden administration, that there will be comments about, say, for instance, what's happening in Kashmir, statements on Kashmir, on human rights?
I think what's genuinely going to happen is, you know, while there is this euphoria about Joe Biden's victory, if indeed he becomes the president of the United States, I want to take off from something Suhasini mentioned. Trumpism is far from dead. And if you look at the strength of the Republicans, both in the House and in the Senate, it remains to be seen what kind of leeway will the Joe Biden presidency, if and when it happens, has to really pay attention to issues in other parts of the world, such as they are, as you mentioned, and how much of the time they are really tied down to domestic manifestations of such issues. And these issues are not going to go away anywhere from America. And there will be increasing pressure on the Joe Biden presidency, if and when it occurs, to deal with those issues. Because really 50% of America, or nearly 50% of America, has still voted for Donald Trump. So as Suhasini said, Donald Trump may be on his way out. Trumpism hasn't gone anywhere. So we have to wait and watch and see. But I fundamentally believe that while countries might make noises about certain things, but they are fundamentally driven by realist approaches. And the realist approach suggests that America and India need to work together to tackle some of the most urgent issues, including China, the Indo-Pacific, climate, and most importantly, trade and business.
Okay. Quick closing comments from Suhasini and then Mr. Michael Kugelman. Suhasini, you go first.
Well, I think we do need to, if we are looking ahead to a Biden administration, we do need to remember that given his age and given the kind of predictions we've seen so far, it's likely to be just one term is what they had been projecting before this election. And there's a lot of things that can be covered. You know, there's a lot that Mr. Trump, low-hanging fruit that Mr. Trump never actually picked up on when it came to the India-US relationship. In fact, he reversed the relationship in many ways, like on trade, where he withdrew India's GSP status for exporters, something we've had since the 1970s. Mm. There is a mini trade deal that's waiting to be done between the two countries. There are things like the waiver on CAPSA, on the S-400 anti-missile system from Russia, that India is hoping to take delivery of next year, which hasn't yet come, and in fact is less likely to perhaps come in a Biden administration unless it's part of some larger deal between the two. I think it is necessary, and that was one of your points there, to relook at how the U.S. bullied India into stopping its oil imports from Iran, particularly when Iranian oil was not just cheaper, Iran is much closer to India, Iranian oil was better suited to Indian refineries at the time. Despite that, we succumbed to that kind of pressure. Yeah. And I think we should really think in terms of whether that should be, there should be a rethink on that as well. And I think that there's a lot that we can look forward to on the positive side as well, in terms of bringing the relationship closer together, And I think that's where we should focus. That if, sure, particularly in these times, nobody has a lot of time.
Sure, sure.
And if this is going to be a single term presidency, then we have even less.
Okay, Mr. Kugelman, your final comments, please.
Yeah, two quick comments. First of all, as important as India would be to a Biden administration and its foreign policy calculations, let's be very clear that if Biden takes office, the very first priority for him would be the pandemic and getting that under control. And by association, dealing with the economic crisis that we have here in the U.S. emerging from the pandemic. So it's not like this is a foreign policy president. This would be someone more familiar with foreign policy than most previous presidents. I think you'd have to go back to George H.W. Bush to get someone as well versed in foreign policy as Biden coming in. But he will be focusing on domestic issues, at least for the first few months initially after he comes to office. Finally, one challenge that I would really see for the U.S.-India relationship under a President Biden would be how to build out this fast-growing U.S.-India security relationship outside of the alliance system that the U.S. prefers, but that India, of course, wishes to avoid. So I think there'll be a need for a Biden administration to figure out how to find a happy medium or to strike a balance between alignment and alliance. I think that will be a very interesting challenge for a Biden administration to look into.
Very interesting. Thank you very much, Mr. Kugelman, Suhasini Heather, Hindol Sen Gupta, Madhugaur Yashki, Alisa Awad, as well as Amitoj Singh. Thank you so much for joining us. We're stopping for a short break, but the big fight continues on the other side. Stay with us. All right, joining us now is Zoran Mamdani. He's a democratic socialist and a rapper who won the seat in the New York State Assembly. Thank you very much, Zoran. You know, I will put your ability number two, that is being a rapper, to test in just a short moment. But I want to ask you, I just want to ask you, the goings on at this moment in the United States, the sort of statements that are coming in, Donald Trump is not going down without a fight. He says it's not over yet. What is your assessment of the way things are playing out?
I think I'm quite confident that Joe Biden is going to win the presidential nomination, but I'm even more confident of the fact that we, as ordinary people across this country, need to assert the right to our democracy. And that's why, regardless of what happens today, if the race is called, tomorrow I'm going to be attending a rally in Manhattan in the afternoon to ensure that every vote is counted. Because we cannot simply sit back and assume that once the cable news networks call it for Joe Biden, that then, you know, things will continue as expected. No, it's quite likely that Donald Trump and the entire Republican Party will continue to challenge the legitimacy of the entire process.
And see, the fear on the streets, you could see pictures. I mean, this is how perhaps you would define the Indian state of Bihar at one point in time, where people are shutting shops, bolting themselves in, not stepping out in the night. And now these are the sort of arrangements being made in the United States. Do you think that this is a fallout of a sort of a systemic decay in the way politics is done?
Absolutely. I think that it's clear that our entire structures of governance across this country are far shakier than we thought they were. And in the duration of a 4-year term, we've seen, you know, them stripped away at every single opportunity. And it's what people are feeling. The fear that people are feeling is irrational fear. I would never question why people are boarding up their shops or why people are taking a couple of days in or going to the grocery store to stock up for the week, because we've seen violence be flamed by the president over the course of these 4 years, and we've seen people hear that call for it and carry it out. And now it's up to us, because it's been made very clear that no one else will come to save us. It has to be the ordinary people of this country that will go out onto the streets and assert the right to this democracy and a right to live a life with dignity.
What do you make of this extremely polarized fight? I mean, if there are 49.4% votes for Biden, there seem to be 49.3 or 49.4% votes for a Trump as well.
Yeah, I think that it speaks to the fact that, you know, we have a country where there are very little, very few people who go and vote who are waiting to be convinced by the candidate. They are rather committed to the party that the candidate belongs to. But, you know, I think what we need to talk about the fact is that in addition to those, you know, those percentages that you were reading, those are percentages of people who come to the polls. Mm. There are many millions of Americans who do not come to the polls. Mm. And those are people who have been left out of the political process and who are making a decision to keep themselves out of it as well. And I think that that should also be a part of the conversation, that we should not think of this country as 50% Democrat and 50% Republican. We have to also speak about the large masses of people who have simply chose to opt out.
That's actually true for all democracies, even in India, with a polling percentage of, say, 60% or 55%. What about the others? It's a sizable number.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, Zohran, before we let you go, any rap song for the situation your country's in? The U.S. Anything that you must have thought of? Anything for our viewers?
I've left that career behind now, and now I'm simply trying to think about policies and protests, and not as much about songs.
Sure. Should I ask you a slightly uncomfortable question? Is it seen as non-serious to talk about being a rapper? Is it considered non-serious in politics that you have to leave it behind?
I don't think it's that I have to leave it behind. You know, I think if this was something that I felt confident that I had the time to do, I would pursue it.
Sure.
But frankly, you know, I don't think that you have time when entering into the world of politics as an elected official to have other full-time pursuits.
You can't.
And I think that I'm very excited about the fact that this is part of my background, because for too long, people have considered politics to be a place where only certain kinds of people with certain kinds of backgrounds can thrive. And we need to make politics as connected to the real world.
No, look at India, Zohran. For instance, look at India. You've got political rap happening in this country. There are a lot of youth who are rapping to express their problem to the political masters. Do you think that this form of music is also an interesting way to put your point across politically?
Absolutely. I think that, look, at its essence, politics and rap and art in general is storytelling. We are trying to tell the stories that we know, that we have lived through. Mm. And in politics, we're trying to tell the stories also of our neighbors. And I think that when you are skilled at storytelling, you are able to open up an avenue for empathy from others who might not otherwise listen to you. Mm. And so I am very excited about the fact that there are people who are rapping their issues to their politicians, because we have to make things as accessible as possible. And I would say that rap is far more popular than politics right now. And we need to ensure that we meet people where they're at and not where we want them to be.
Sure. Zohran Mamdani, thank you so much. Pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. That's a wrap in this edition of The Big Fight, but news will continue on the other side. Stay with us.